sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Coming to you this morning from J&J Garden Center, where the tomato frenzy is underway. So you have Maria, Ton, and Andy with you taking your calls and questions. You can call us 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Our top of the hour feature, we want to talk this morning more about tomatoes since we are here with the tomato expert, Andy. And let's talk about the difference between your traditional tomatoes and heirloom tomatoes. Kind of, what are the differences?
So you got your regular tomatoes, but these heirlooms have been around for a very long time. And a lot of them, if you do the research on them, they came from all over the world. Romania and Russia, and you get into different parts of the United States and different things, but they've just been around forever. And what I say with them is they've got that true tomato taste. A lot of them, most of your traditional tomatoes are all red. When it comes to the heirlooms, they're all colors. And one's called pineapple, and then there's big rainbow, and there's black creme. And, of course, you think of that, and they all have those black creme. It's certainly black with some deep red streaks through it.
And it's sweet and delicious.
There's even one that they call like a white. Mm-hmm. There was a white one at one time, and they're just fun. There's a company out there called Totally Tomatoes, and you can get online or get their catalog, and they have hundreds of these different types of heirlooms in them. I try to carry, I was just looking, I have my lips pulled up here on me right now, and I've got quite a few different ones that we've come out that we've tried to carry, but we try to carry the most populars, you know, and just the ones that people come back. Cherokee Purple is another fun one. It's kind of got a sweet but also a smoky flavor to it, and their flavors are usually quite distinct, but people really like them too because of the colors. They use them in a lot of salads because they're colorful. They're just not red.
I like the variety.
Yes.
Variety of colors in a salad.
So there are the heirloom tomatoes out there that have, over the last 10 or 15 years, had a resurgence in popularity because of the uniqueness. You know, and I've noticed in the heirlooms that they bred tomatoes for specific purposes. It wasn't just the purple color. You need a soup tomato, there's a soup tomato. If you need aroma, which is an heirloom type tomato, there's dozens of those. And so they bred these for different purposes, too.
Yeah, so like I have, you know, there's paste tomatoes. You know, your typical Romas and San Marzano. There's one I carry this year called Super Sauce. And it's literally like this extra, extra large tomato that Burpee came out with. And it really fits in the size of your hand, but it's humongous and it's really firm, not a lot of juice to it. So people are using those for salsas. Then you get into the full range of cherry tomatoes. I'm looking here. I'm probably got, you know, over a dozen different type of little cherry tomatoes. Some called, you know, Sweet Million, where you're really tiny, tiny, all the way from a red cherry large. Certainly you step up into the 4th of July because people want that early, but it's only about the size of a ping pong ball.
So there's but when there's no tomatoes around.
Yeah,
it gives you tomatoes.
So you got those, and then, you know, your early girls, and then you get into all your other regular type of tomatoes. But they're just fun if you really get into all the what I like to do in my garden is I like to try something new every year.
Mm-hmm.
That way I can tell people, hey, I really like this one, this one, what this one did, and all that kind of fun stuff.
So can you differentiate the difference from those old heirlooms that everyone's really liking right now as compared to something like a Big Boy, a Better Boy, or a Celebrity?
Well, typically, you know, you get into those where they've actually, they keep modifying them to make them better and more disease resistant, which is wonderful for people and makes it a lot easier to garden with, where you don't have some of these viruses and stuff that can attack these tomatoes. The heirlooms really do a good job a lot of times of doing that on their own, but they're also, they're actually taking tomatoes and they're taking the stock of an heirloom tomato because it's got a really good root system, very healthy, and they're actually taking another type of a hybrid tomato and grafting it on top of it because they're more prolific and have more abundance of fruit, and they're putting the two, so they're putting a good root system with a very good top and having a wonderful
plant. And so those grafted tomatoes are really fun. And so if you're wanting to preserve the tomatoes, you're canning them, making stewed tomatoes and things, a Celebrity or a Better Boy may be a better option.
They could be, because exactly, because you're going to get a lot more for like canning and salsas and different stuff like that. I have two here that are really good for that, and one's the one that was developed by Dr. Hansen, which is the DX5212, is a really good canning tomato. It's really good.
I can
good
never
in the
remember the name, though.
Yeah, it's everybody comes in and says, "What's the number one?"
Right.
And then the other one is one that has been around forever. It's called Moscow, and so that's another very good canner.
All right, you said you went back there. There's still a great assortment,
they
wide
are,
variety.
They're fully stocking.
Even though I'm watching cart after cart go by,
after cart
full.
Let's keep coming out, but they're stocking it faster than they're coming out. And I have greenhouses full of these things, literally.
Okay. It's the tomato frenzy.
It is the tomato
frenzy. And that
frenzy
means you're offering a great price.
We are. They have the large size containers, which is comparable to a gallon, is half off right now. So they're $2.99, and that will run from, it's been running all week, but it will run up and through next Saturday.
All right. We are at J&J Garden Center. Tomato frenzy underway. Coming back with your calls and questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us 57500. Good morning. Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria, Ton, Andy, taking your calls and questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text at 57500. We are at J&J Garden Center for the Tomato Frenzy, underway through next weekend. Andy is on the line. Andy, good morning. What was your question?
I live in Eagle Mountain, and I'm not used to the some of the things that are out here. I'm more from the Roy area. So I'm trying to get a lawn in, and the soil out here seems, well, I haven't had it tested yet, which I'm going to do, but just wondering if there's anything particular that might help me get some good soil for the lawn and bushes and things like that, because it seems rather clay. It's real hard. It's in some ways similar to what I had up in Roy in the lower flats, but it's a little bit different color and kind of rocky with it. I don't know if you're familiar with
what
it.
What I would recommend doing is definitely getting it tested from either BYU or USU's labs. BYU, if you're in Provo, you can drop it off on campus. If you just search BYU Analytical Laboratory, it will come up. But USU, you can mail it off, and both labs charge around $30 or so. And if you get it from USU, you want what's called the routine test. And so you'd go to usual.usu.edu or just do a search of USU Analytical Laboratory or USU Soil Lab, but you want the routine test. Given the soils out in Eagle Mountain can be very variable just within a few hundred yards, given that you get, let's say, a relatively normal test back, what I would recommend doing, just especially if it's a little salty, is actually planting turf-type tall fescue, because it will tolerate the clay soil better, it roots deeper, and it looks and acts like Kentucky bluegrass.
What was that kind again?
Turf type tall fescue. It doesn't really roll off the tongue very well, but it makes a great lawn. So
right.
Turf type tall fescue.
And with that, a year or two ago, I heard you guys talking about a a graft that had been engineered, I guess, to be more tolerant to our climate?
Well, the Water Saver grass is available from several local retailers now. So you may check with places like IFA or Steve Regan. But the major component in that grass is turf-type tall fescue.
Okay. All right. One other question with the soil is, I think from what I remember hearing you in the past, basically the best thing to do to try and break up the soil is basically putting a mulch-type thing and getting it to break down. Is that really
you
the best way to do it?
You want to till compost into your soil.
Is there a certain kind of compost that works better?
No. Nutrimulch, Oakdale, Soil Pep, any of those would be fine.
And any recommendation about how thick I would put it down before tilling it
2 to 3 inches tilled in, 6 inches deep.
Okay. I think that's a pretty good base for what I'm going after.
All right, Andy. Thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, is it too late to cut back their heritage raspberries? They're about 4 feet tall, and they've leafed out.
I would, any dead canes, I would just remove those and maybe cut them back to chest height, but I would leave them alone otherwise.
All right. Next listener says they have 3 apple trees with powdery mildew. Is there any hope of getting rid of it, or should they just cut them down?
As soon as the blossoms drop, well, depending on where the apples are, if they're in a colder area, they would still be fine doing a delayed dormant spray, and that would help. But what I would do otherwise is wait till the blossoms drop and then find a fungicide that is registered for powdery mildew. They do not want to use Daconil because it is just preventative, but they want something curative, and they would start regular treatments and then make sure that the trees are not being sprayed by overhead water.
All right. Jerry is on the line in Provo. Good morning, Jerry. What was your question?
I have some peat moss, a bag of peat moss gave me, and I'm wondering if I can use that in my, I have a box garden, a grow box garden on my patio. So when I put seeds in, can I cover them with peat moss?
Yeah, absolutely. I would just go really a fine layer. So if you're doing seeds, just put probably 1/4 inch or something on top of it. Now, larger the seeds, you can go more. If they're tiny, tiny seeds, go less. And that will help hold that moisture, and you kind of create a little greenhouse environment. You're almost like sandwiching the seeds between 2 layers, and it will help them come up and sprout and take root.
Good. Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you for your call this morning. Next person says, if they put winterizer on their lawn last fall, should they still put a pre-emergent on the lawn this spring?
Yes, especially if they've had severe weed problems.
Next listener says, do you have any tips on getting tomato blossoms to set? They get a lot of blossoms, but then not very many tomatoes.
There's actually a product out there called Tomato Set that you can actually spray your tomatoes with that'll help with that.
Hmm.
The other thing is like we talked a little bit before, is let's make sure that we're not overwatering the plant, and let's make sure that we're not over-fertilizing the plant, and then not watering overhead and washing the pollination off of the blossoms.
Okay. Tomato frenzy underway. We've been talking a lot about tomatoes, but we just had a lawn question, and you have all sorts of products for lawn care here as well at
J&J?
We do.
So we have a 5-step program that's certainly a wonderful one that's been tried and tested for years now that we're doing. The other thing is we sell all the individual components, and we also sell a whole bunch of other fertilizers that we actually blend here on site. We have our own fertilizer blending plant that we blend all the raw goods. And so we have a lot of different formulations up there. We also sell some products. One's called ProPeat. It's actually a fertilizer that's wrapped in peat moss that is actually a good product as well. But we have the Basin's Best line that we do ourselves. And any formulation, come in and talk to our experts that are up in our retail store, and they can kind of, you tell them what kind of condition your lawn's in, and they'll tell you what's best to put on it right now.
All right. Great time to plant trees. You lots of those as well.
The best time to plant a tree is when you have help.
Right?
You know what I mean?
I'm going to agree with that.
Maria's
totally.
Discovered that. She's
I have discovered that.
She's planted a bunch of B&B trees recently.
Yeah, so if you've got help or some type of machinery. But no, right now is great to be planting trees because our weather's cooler right now. Now, one thing that we do here at J&J is we bring in a lot of our trees really early. Some of them start coming in January. And what that does is it climatizes them. As our weather progresses, those trees are climatized to this climate here across the Wasatch Front. So that's number one. But if you can get them planted right now, number one, they don't require as much water because you're not going into those summer months. They won't go through shock like they are this summer. So the best time to plant those trees is right now and then again in the fall.
All right. And then you also have topsoil on sale.
We
know people are getting their ground ready, right?
Yeah, you got to have good beds and add some more material into those flower beds or a vegetable garden. We have carry a product. It's a J&J premium topsoil that we had blended to something that we would like. That's actually a good product. It doesn't have hardly any bark in it at all, if any. But it's good. It's good for flower beds, vegetable gardens. It's also good to, if you're planting trees and shrubs, to mix it with that existing soil that you come out of the hole with to just help freshen up. And it's a nice, loose product. So the roots of these, whatever you're planting, can get into it really easy and take hold.
Tom, when people are looking at their soil right now, getting ready to plant their vegetable gardens, their tomatoes, what do they need to think about? I mean, when you go out there and you dig and it's too rocky, I mean, what should you be thinking about?
Well, rocks, there's not much you can do about. And if it gets so severe that you can't dig because of the rocks, you really need to consider raised beds in that situation. And so that is something that where you have extremely rocky soil or very salty soil, is always something you can do. But just your average garden soil, it's a great time to put in some compost, mix it in. You don't plant in compost. You always mix it into the soil.
So important.
So it's very important to know that. But it's getting warm enough that I've taken a shovel out, and this, at least in my area, the soil is dry enough now that it can be worked. You don't want to over-till it, but if you do need to do a tilling, it's fine to do.
All right. Take a break for the bottom of the hour news. Come back with more of your calls and questions. Number to call, 801-575-8255. Text us, 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse, coming to you live from J&J Garden Center, where the tomato frenzy is underway. Ton getting caught up in the frenzy, wandering away. I was worried you weren't coming back, Ton.
I was trying to make it down to the tomatoes, but I didn't.
You have to wait for another 25 minutes, and then you and I will go visit the tomatoes.
Okay.
All right. Maria, Ton, Andy with you this morning, taking your calls and questions. Next listener wants to know, can the wisteria trees survive here? There are wisteria trees?
Well, they've been trained into a tree form.
Okay. So it's the vine that looks like a tree.
And it'll be put on a stake, and they'll wait until the trunk really thickens up.
Mm-hmm.
You can train them anywhere from 3 to maybe 4 or 5 feet tall, and then they form a weeping tree. And you go in as soon as they're done blooming and trim it back and let it shoot the new growth for the year, because they only bloom on one-year-old wood.
Mm-hmm.
But J&J does carry them. Other garden centers will have them. But it's just that they can be a little expensive because you might have to train them for 4 or 5 years. And so you could pay for anywhere from $80 to maybe $150, depending on the size. But once you get them, they're beautiful.
All right. Harry is on the line in Heber City. Good morning, Harry. What was your question?
I've got a pine tree that I've taken 6 feet off the bottom as far as the limbs, and I was wondering what ground cover I should put under there.
Well, there's all sorts of things. How much shade do you have under there?
Well, it's a pretty good diameter. It's about 20 to 30 feet in diameter.
Okay. Because even though you've gone up 6 feet, it's certain, like on the north and east side of the tree, this shade still may be too intense for a lot of things to survive, but in areas where you are getting enough sunlight, Andy, do you have any suggestions for shade ground covers?
You know, there's a lot out there that are nice. Probably Ajuga is one of the good ones. Any of your ivies are good. Bishop's weed, if you want. Vincas, you got minor, majors, you got the variegated versions. Any of those would do quite well.
Yeah, some of the, the dead nettles, what's the other name for dead nettle? But there's some, there are many ground covers that tolerate the shade. But, yeah, and so it's just making sure that, because the pine trees are so dense that sometimes you may need to limb them up a little further if that's your goal so that the ground cover can survive.
And sometimes, too, you get a problem with your needles and the siccity in them, correct?
Well, I think it's more the density of the needles that can, they're so dense that it allows them to not grow. And so they do need to be raked up, and you can use those needles in a compost pile, or if you don't want weeds to grow in other areas, but it's the thickness of them, they can quickly smother anything under the tree.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Harry, thanks for your call.
This Lamium is what I was thinking
Lamium.
Of.
Lamium, okay.
Yes.
Next listener wants to know, is it too late to prune roses?
No, I would get it done. They're budding out and leafing out now, but you might be a little more conservative, but anything dead or diseased that are going to take out, if it's hybrid tea roses, I would take them down to probably thigh height.
Okay, Janice in Clearfield would like to know how she can save the bulbs that she has to dig up now.
Unfortunately, there's not going to be a way if they're actively growing. I see Andy shaking his head, too.
But you can replant them somewhere else.
Because they're actively growing, it's so much of a shock that I don't know if many of them would survive.
But it would be worth a try.
You can try.
Be like me, experiment.
You could dig them up. The thing, like, let's say your tulips or daffodils or anything like that, the rule of thumb on those is you want to let the leaves, the foliage, naturally die back on its own, because what that is doing is taking all the nutrients from the sun and the ground, and it's sucking all that back into the bulb right now and storing it up for next year. So you really want to wait until those leaves all die back, and you can kind of tell because you can actually go out there and just pull them up, and they'll just come out really easy. If they don't, they're still in there, you need to wait. I would wait, if you're going to attempt to try to move those bulbs, wait until that point, then dig them up and try moving them. Just plant them up the right depth, and then see what happens next spring.
All right. Lynette would like to know if it's okay still to prune her peach tree this late.
Get it done. It should have been pruned a month ago, and I would be a little more conservative, cut anything dead and diseased out. There's the three D's of pruning, and so that's dead wood, diseased wood, and then dumb branches. And the dumb branches are the ones that are going in toward the middle of the tree. They're growing downward. They're crossing. And so I would just cut the major ones out, and then what I would do, though, because you're probably going to have a heavier fruit load from not pruning so heavily, is you're going to have to really thin those peaches hard. So you maybe have one peach for every 6 inches to foot of branch, and I'd consider going to about every foot.
All right. Gigi is on the line in Highland. Good morning. What was your question this morning? Okay.
All right. Beautiful, beautiful leaves, and I used one of those apps to look at, find out what it was. It was some kind of a mulberry one. Now, first of all, where may that tree have come from? And second of all, they have little mulberry, and I didn't know if they were poisonous, but I told my husband to have 911 just in case as I took a bite of it. So, because I didn't know if it was going to poison me.
Well, that was pretty adventurous.
Well, mulberry trees, you probably had a bird poop some seeds out.
Oh,
and
okay.
Mulberries, the fruit, is very edible and tasty, and is okay. Very popular in the Middle East, places like Iran, Iraq, Pakistan. They're used in all sorts of dishes, especially desserts,
okay.
And you could make pies and things out of them. So you can look up mulberry recipes, and the reason you don't see more fruiting mulberries out there is because they're messy. You know, they attract the birds in, and then they also get pretty big. And so
great.
That tree
so
can get
right
40 feet high and wide.
Okay. So should we take that out? Because it's like, and I can see where they probably may have, because it's right next to a fence, and that's what I was wondering.
It will probably heave the fence.
It's probably just sitting there.
Yeah, and you would need to talk to the neighbors, but because of the size and the mass, just being a good neighbor, I would consider it.
Should we, is it possible to just keep trimming it low, keeping it short?
It wants to be 40 feet, and if you do that, you're going to make it angry as it grows.
Okay.
And it's just going to keep growing more and more branches. So you could for a number of years, but the other thing is mulberries, as they mature, after 4 or 5 years, they don't like heavy pruning. And so you can, they can get diseases and things in them, and so you need to be super careful.
Okay, thank you so much. It was a really good berry, by the way. So
yes.
All right. Okay, thanks so much for your call. Earl is wondering, he would like your thoughts on growing clover instead of grass, and then is wondering what would be the best type to grow.
You know, it's very untested in Utah, and initially it is more drought hardy than especially Kentucky bluegrass, but when it is too drought stressed, it dies. It doesn't just go dormant like Kentucky bluegrass. And so I'm torn on the whole thing. Clover doesn't tolerate foot traffic like lawn does. When it's mixed into lawn, it will. And so it just depends on their purposes. You know, nationally, this clover lawn thing has taken off, and the Intermountain West is so unique that our local gardeners should not be jumping on the bandwagon of a lot of these trends, because we just don't know. And so if I needed something more water-wise, I would veer toward some of the Conservancy District-sponsored water-wise grass mixes, or maybe even buffalo grass, just because the clover lawns are untested. And the few that I've seen, like Liz Braithwaite up in Brigham City, had a clover lawn, and she just wasn't very impressed with it. And that's only one instance. And so we need more. And so I'm just cautious on them.
All right. You can hear the carts rolling by, and that's because we are at J&J Garden Center, where the tomato frenzy is underway. And it's called the frenzy because you create a frenzy by dropping the price on these tomatoes to something that people can't resist, Andy.
Yeah, we do. So we drop them down half price. And so this year they're $2.99 each, and that's for the large size comparable to a gallon-sized pot. But yes, all varieties, cherry tomatoes, paste tomato, grape tomatoes. I haven't mentioned those. There's two this year. We got the Juliet back, which was nice. I wasn't able to get it last year, which is a popular one. There's all the heirloom tomatoes. There's your regular large sandwich tomatoes, salsa tomatoes, paste tomatoes.
So many varieties. How in the world do you decide which ones to grow?
You know, it's really by popularity, and that's what I try to carry. And then I try to add on a whole bunch of new ones just to try to get people to see. And I was looking actually just a minute ago on my list, and there was a whole bunch of new fun ones that I've tried, different colors, and whether they're a cherry or a large or a series of them, just to have some fun stuff to experiment with. Because you never know. It's like the first year, you know, you have the Sun Sugar. Is that going to be a hit or not? Mm-hmm. Well, it was an extreme hit, and so now you have to do those. But they're always coming out with new things every year, so we'd like to try them.
It's funny, with these popular varieties that hit, there's probably another 15 or 20 that are equally as tasty and grow equally as well. And for some reason, they just never take off.
Absolutely. So, and there's one very comparable to the Sun Sugar called Sun Gold. But I'm just sitting here looking at my list. There's one called Sparky. There's a Lemon Cherry. There's Gold Spark. There's one I was explaining a little earlier. It's called Tomato Berry. The shape of it actually looks like a strawberry. But, yeah, some of these are just delicious. Chocolate Sprinkles is another one. All kinds of fun stuff that are certainly tasty. It's just trying to get the general public to try some of these out. And next year, all of a sudden, you'll have a run on them.
Right. You also have to have good soil when you're planting tomatoes. You have your topsoil on sale as well.
We do. It's a J&J premium blend. We had it blended for us because of what we like, because we weren't happy with just a regular bag of topsoil and how much bark and different things we had in it. So we combined two products, had it screened really well. And I said this earlier, but it's fluffy. It looks, you open the bag, it's like you just want to lay down and take a nap in it. It's that fun.
I love it.
So, no, it's good stuff, and you can put that in anything, whether it's flower beds or planting a tree or your veggie gardens. Start with good soil and good plants, and you should end up with a good garden in the end.
Tomato Frenzy underway until the end of next Saturday, right?
And end of next Saturday, and right now we're open from 8 to 8, Monday through Saturday.
Perfect. Thanks so much for having us here today.
We're certainly grateful every time you come out.
Going to take a break, come back with the final segment of the KSL Greenhouse. 801-575-8255 is the number to call or text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria, Ton, and Andy with you this morning, coming to you from J&J Garden Center, where the Tomato Frenzy is underway through next Saturday. Let's go back to our phone lines for this final segment. Sukanda is in Taylorsville. Good morning. What was your question?
Yes, I have a concrete cut for the contractor working on it, and then I have a garden box and garden border, vegetable garden around the area. So my question is, with the concrete cutting, dusting, allow spread, allow, you know, those areas, do I need to dig up all the soil and repress the soil so to make sure that it's not toxic when I grow a vegetable garden or anything around those areas? Should I?
The cement isn't going to be toxic to growing plants. When they're done pouring the cement, I would wash it a little bit, just hose it down and rinse it. But people grow in cement beds and the plants are just fine.
Oh, okay. Another question is, last year I remodeled and then they built the awning in my back porch, and the bottle of a mineral spirit actually spilled. There's a fruit tree that area. It's about 2 feet away that got spilled. Is it plants, the tree still, if they, you know, this year, if there's a fruit coming out, is it anything that can, you know, causing the fruit that come out that toxic out of the spilling the mineral spirit oil?
Can you ask that one more time? My headphones were turned down just a little low.
Last year, I have the contractor built an awning, and then why they building it? There's a mineral spirit bottle, you know, that clean the wood or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Minerals, and actually spill around the fruit tree, one of the three. Will that soil will become a toxic, and when it grow, you know, the mineral spirit will seep into the tree and causing the fruit, you know.
Oh, she's wondering if those mineral spirits are going to make the tree unable to eat the figs.
So have you noticed if the fig is, if you see yellow leaves or any dead growth or leaves or branches?
No.
Okay.
It's and did you still.
Okay, and did you scoop up the soil where the mineral spirits were spilled?
No.
Okay.
Not
yet. Okay. A year after the fact, I think you're going to be okay.
Okay. Do I need to test the soil or anything?
There's really... The kind of soil test you would need could cost hundreds of dollars. And if you wanted to, you could. You would want to contact Brigham Young University's analytical laboratory, and they have access to labs that could test for that, but it can get quite expensive.
Oh.
All right.
Okay. Okay. But it's
all right.
Okay, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you should be okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Thanks for your call bye-bye. This morning. Show goes by so quickly.
It does.
We do have listeners wondering where they can hear the program. You can always hear the show at kslpodcast.com. We do have another J&J question here. Someone wants to know if you're going to be getting any David Austin roses in.
Absolutely. So we actually brought in the stock. We grow them ourselves. We've just been waiting for the night temperatures not to look like we're going to have a frost, because they are in a cold building, but I don't want to bring them out and chance it. I will tell you this, more to come on that. We're getting all our roses on Monday, all our regulars.
Oh.
So next week, at some given point, and we're not sure what day, just for the listeners, we will have the David Austin Rose morning. And you can come in and get them all. We'll have them all loaded up on trailers, ready to go for you.
We just have a few seconds.
Just pay attention to our website and also to our Instagram and Facebook page.
Just have a few seconds, Les. Just wanted to thank you for having us out today and tell people that the Tomato Frenzy underway all the way through the end of next Saturday.
Absolutely. Till next Saturday.
All right.
Andy, half off.
Thank you so much for having us in today.
Thank you for being here.
And if you're just tuning in to the Greenhouse Show, you can catch us in podcast form, kslpodcast.com. We have a lot of great info on all of our top-of-the-hour features, also on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. You going to be doing some planting today, Tom?
I'm teaching at the Botanical Center, and then I have events tonight, so I don't even think I'll be home until probably 8 or 9 tonight.
Oh, not me. It's going to be a beautiful day. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch you again next Saturday, 8 to 11.